Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session at the end of today's presentation. To ask a question at that time, you may press star one, record your name and affiliation. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time, and I would now like to turn the call over today to our host, John Bateman. You may begin when ready. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. My name is John Bateman. I'm with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email, and I will spell it, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. That's nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory, and I will spell it out for you now if you don't have it. It is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. And with that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the April United States and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Dennis Toddy, director of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Midwest Climate Hub in Ames, Iowa, who will provide an update on the current state of agriculture in the Plains and Midwest as of mid-May. And our third presenter is Brad Pugh, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the summer seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of June, July, and August. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide 2 to discuss the global temperatures for April 2020. The month of April was characterized by warmer than average temperatures across much of the globe, as you can see in our anomalies map on the left. The most notable warm temperature anomalies were observed across much of northern Asia, where temperatures were at least 4 degrees Celsius or 7 degrees Fahrenheit above the 1981 to 2000 average. Other notable warm areas include Western Australia, Central Europe, the Gulf of Mexico, and across parts of the northern and southern Pacific Ocean, as well as parts of Antarctica, where temperatures were at least 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above average. We did see some areas that had cooler than average conditions. The most notable cool temperature departures were present across Canada and the northern and eastern contiguous U.S., where temperatures were at least 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit below average. Averaged as a whole, the global land and ocean surface temperature for April 2020 was near record warm at 1.06 degrees Celsius or 1.91 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. Only April of 2016 was warmer. I wanted to highlight that April 2016 and 2020 were the only Aprils that had a global land and ocean surface temperature departure above the 1 degree Celsius or 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit. Compared to all months, the monthly value for April 2020 tied with December 2019 as the 11th highest monthly temperature departure on record. I also wanted to highlight the global ocean temperature, which was the warmest for the month of April at 0.83 degrees Celsius or 1.49 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. Compared to all months, the April 2020 value tied with the 7th highest monthly global ocean surface temperature on record, and our records go back to 1880. Regionally, the global, the Caribbean region and the Gulf of Mexico had their warmest April on record, while South America, Africa, Asia, and Oceania had an April temperature that ranked among the six highest on record. Moving now to slide 3. The year-to-date global land and ocean surface temperature was also the second highest on record since going back to 1880 at 1.14 degrees Celsius or 2.05 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. January through April of 2016 is the record warm. The first 4 months of the year had warmer than average temperatures across much of the globe. As you can see in the map, record warm temperatures during January through April were present across Mexico, Central America, the Gulf of Mexico, South America, the Atlantic Ocean, Europe, Asia, and across parts of the Pacific and Southern Indian Oceans. However, no land or ocean areas had record cold January through April temperatures. Regionally, Europe and Asia had their warmest January through April period on record, while the Caribbean region and South America had their second warmest period on record. Looking at our statistical analysis, what we call the annual temperature rankings outlook, the year 2020 is almost certain to rank among the four warmest years on record, with a 69% chance of it being the warmest year. Moving now to slide 4, looking at the contiguous U.S., averaged as a whole, the temperature and precipitation for the U.S. were near average. However, we did see some regional differences. During the month of April, we saw an upper-level ridge that was off the West Coast, while an upper-level trough was over the eastern North America. And this trough allowed for cold and dry air from Canada into central and eastern contiguous U.S. and contributed to cooler-than-average conditions in these regions. However, no state had a top 10 cold April. Above average temperatures were observed across much of the West Coast and Southwest, as well as Florida. Florida ranked as the sixth warmest on record for April, and Miami had its warmest April on record, surpassing the previous record that was set in 2015 by over a degree. I also wanted to briefly mention Alaska, even though it's not pictured here. The Alaska April temperature was 4.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average, tying with 1997 as the 15th warmest April. Much of Alaska had above average temperatures during the month of April, while parts of the Southeast and Panhandle regions had near to below average conditions for the month. In terms of precipitation, we saw above average conditions that were present across much of the West, part of the West, lower Mississippi Valley, the Southeast, the Mid-Atlantic, and New England. The state of West Virginia had its fifth wettest April, while Virginia and Georgia had their sixth wettest April on record. Below average conditions were observed across the Pacific Northwest all the way to the Western Great Lakes and from the Southwest through the Canadian border. The states of Nebraska and Colorado had their sixth driest April on record. Briefly talking about Alaska again, April climatologically tends to be one of the driest months of the year. However, April 2020 was wet, with several locations receiving 3 to 5 times the average value. Averaged as a whole, this was the 12th wettest April on record for Alaska. And also, I wanted to mention the year-to-date, the January through April temperature for the contiguous U.S., was 3 degrees Fahrenheit above average, resulting in the 10th warmest year-to-date on record. All states had above average temperatures, with 13 states having a year-to-date temperature that ranked among the 5 warmest on record, and Florida had its warmest year-to-date on record. Moving now to slide 5, looking at drought across the contiguous U.S. As of yesterday, 18.9% of the contiguous U.S. was in drought. That is about 4 percentage points more than about the same time in April. Drought conditions deteriorated across parts of the West due to the dry and very warm conditions that we've seen these past few weeks. And beneficial rains helped improve drought conditions across the South and Florida. Looking outside of the U.S., very dry conditions continue to affect Hawaii and Puerto Rico. This week, Puerto Rico and Hawaii saw expansion of abnormally dry conditions across parts of the island. In terms of the U.S. Virgin Islands, drought was deteriorated to moderate drought this week due to several weeks of little to no rain. So that's all I have for today. I will now turn it over to Dennis Toddy.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Ira. I appreciate the handover here. Dennis Toddy from the USDA Midwest Climate Hub, and we're going to jump ahead to slide 7. We're going to be talking about a couple freeze events specifically and affecting agricultural conditions across the middle U.S. Most agricultural situations are generally better than they were, especially last year. Some dry conditions mentioned in the U.S. Drought Monitor helped to dry out soils and get planting well ahead of time, except for a couple problem states, Missouri and North Dakota being the worst at this point. But the bigger issue that has affected especially specialty crops, those are non-row crops, more fruit crops and tree fruits, were affected by two large freezes, one the middle of April, which was extremely cold, a bit early comparatively, but it was extremely cold with temperatures into the teens. We had sub-digit values across the northern U.S. And then a second one in the middle of May, which was not as cold, but very late, especially across the east. The map on the right-hand side shows what the median or mean, close to the mean freeze date is across the U.S. That yellowish, goldish band in the middle is kind of the third week or the last part of April is the median time over the last 30 years for the last freeze. So that freeze in April was not that late, and actually not late climatologically except for some places further south. But the problem was you had we've had very warm conditions prior to April. We talked about April being cold. We had warm conditions prior to that that have pushed conditions along. We'll talk about that in just a second. And remind people that freeze events are combinations of not only temperatures, but what the phenology of the crop is and the different crops, because crops at different stages are susceptible to different types of freeze or different temperatures based on what they are. Let's go ahead to slide 8. Where we're talking about some of the background. And we're showing you a couple graphics. Up on the upper right-hand side is the National Fetological Network. It's supported by USGS, which tracks phenology across the U.S. And any place that is colored in across the map has had their first leaf out, and the date of this was April 16th. That red area in the southeast, that early leaf out was maybe 2 weeks ahead of average. Places that are in blue in the plains were slightly behind average in their first leaf out. And if there's not color there, they had not leafed out by this point. So this is why the cold in early April or mid-April was not too harmful further north, but was somewhat harmful further south and in the plains area where we had very cold temperatures. You heard that April was relatively cool overall. On the left-hand side, we have a graphic from the High Plains Regional Climate Center showing how temperatures were in March, that they ran across most of our area, the middle part of the U.S., 4 to 6 or more degrees above average. February was also warm. So what you had was pushing crops or perennials to emerge more quickly and more earlier than usual. Let's go ahead to slide 9, and we have the same graphic here, but we've now moved the time period up to the middle of May, May 15th, and now you see that there's colored in area all across the U.S. We've had leaf out over the whole U.S., though the northern tier is behind, they were a couple weeks behind their usual leaf out. So those cool temperatures in April and that have carried over in May slowed things down a little bit, so number of plants weren't quite as far along, so when the freezes came in May, they were still not damaged quite as badly, whereas some places further south. Okay, let's go to slide 10, and we'll talk about some of the impacts of this. First, we'll start with some of our agricultural crops, row crops. Winter wheat is something planted in the fall, goes dormant in the winter, reemerges in the spring. So it is not planted in the spring, so it's going to go whenever it's warm enough. And the freeze is probably the worst, the freeze in the plains is probably the worst, the biggest impact on wheat in that area. The graphic in the upper left-hand side is provided by the USDA Office of the Chief Economist, Brad Rippey, with USDA NAS, National Agricultural Statistics Service, data that are collected every week on crop conditions. And the lighter the colors are the places where winter wheat was worst. And basically the Central Plains down to Arkansas, but the Central Plains were the places where we saw probably the worst problem with freezing conditions, also impacted by drought. In the eastern Corn Belt, the Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois, winter wheat was slightly impacted there, but not as badly. The graphic on the lower right-hand side shows winter wheat conditions for Indiana. Again, this is also from the Office of the Chief Economist. The red line shows this year compared to previous years, and there you can see a slight dip there in May, showing that there was a slight worsening of conditions when the freeze event, but not anything too serious. Okay, let's proceed to slide 11 then. And we're going to talk about some, probably the worst of the conditions that were hurt. These are specialty crops, tree fruits, other other types of planted that are food crops. And these are much more widespread around the region, going from Colorado all the way to the Northeast U.S. Worst hit seems to be a lot of the tree fruits, peaches, apples, certainly, especially earlier varieties of apples in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, apricots, where there was damage that was done. Planted vegetables a number had not been planted yet, but there was a report of 9,000 peppers killed in Ohio. Southern Ohio, there was sweet corn that had been planted already and was frozen in this. Grapes also were kind of variety specific and type specific. Areas of Michigan, the grape, especially the wine grapes, survived okay. Juice grapes were hurt. And then as you got down into Ohio again, grapes were damaged in that area. Probably the biggest individual one we've heard so far is there's a lot of peach production in the western slope of Colorado. 90% of, or reports locally of 90% of losses due to the freeze in that area. And you can see in this picture apples that were damaged in Michigan. And we'll go along to slide 12 just to catch up on some other crops. In the northern plains, small grains, we're talking wheat that are planted in the spring, there was a little bit of damage to those. Most of the row crops, which we're talking about corn, beans, and some others, were largely unaffected because they had been planted but had not emerged from the ground yet. Some corn had emerged already, but it as long as it's not very large, can handle being for some freezing conditions. Most soybeans were not emerged yet, except for a few places in Illinois. This picture in Illinois where there had been some very early planted soybeans that may have to be replanted at this point. So that concludes assessments of some of the freezing conditions, and we'll pass it over to Brad Pugh.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Pugh from the Climate Prediction Center. So moving along now to slide number 14. It's a quick update on ENSO conditions. Currently in the upper left-hand corner there are the average sea surface temperature anomalies for the past 4 weeks, which shows near to above normal sea surface temperature anomalies continuing across the equatorial Pacific. But the sea surface temperatures have cooled slightly recently east of the dateline. The oceanic and atmospheric observations currently reflect ENSO neutral conditions. Would like to point out, have a fairly large positive sea surface temperature anomalies present across the Caribbean Sea and Gulf of Mexico. And in the lower left-hand corner is the CPC IRI probabilistic ENSO forecast, the bar graphs there. So you can see ENSO neutral conditions are most likely to persist through this summer with chances of around 60 to 65%. But as you move into the late summer and fall season, chances for ENSO neutral conditions decreased slightly with a increase in La Nina chances developing later this summer and fall. So moving to the next slide, number 15 will be the monthly forecast for June. Increased chances of above normal temperatures are forecast for Alaska, the western U.S., Gulf Coast states, and north along the eastern seaboard. June precipitation is forecast to average above normal across southern Alaska, with a small area of below normal precipitation favored in coastal Washington and Oregon. And across the central and eastern United States, above normal precipitation is favored for much of the Great Plains, Mississippi Valley, and Southeast. So moving to the next slide now, number 16, the seasonal forecast for June, July, and August. Temperatures are forecast to likely average above normal throughout Alaska and the western U.S., with very large probabilities of above normal temperatures, above 70% centered across the Four Corners region. Above normal temperatures are also favored along the Gulf Coast and north across the eastern U.S. For parts of the northern to central plains, also the Midwest, equal chances of near, below, or above normal temperatures are forecast. And for precipitation during June, July, August, above normal precipitation is favored for much of Alaska, except for the panhandle. And across the continental U.S., a dipole of below normal precipitation is favored for much of the western U.S., with above normal precipitation favored for much of the central and eastern U.S., with probabilities slightly more elevated across the southeast U.S. And final slide is number 17, which is the seasonal drought outlook, which shows drought likely to persist for ongoing drought areas throughout the western U.S. with a slight expansion of drought conditions. And that's related to the likelihood of above normal temperatures, but also a slightly elevated chances for below normal precipitation. Prospects for improving drought conditions a little bit higher across parts of Kansas, Oklahoma, the Texas Panhandle, due in part to climatology, but forecast confidence fairly low for that improvement. Improving conditions more likely for the Gulf Coast and Florida, where the climatology is very wet during the summer, especially in July and August, and also could be seeing heavier rainfall during the next few weeks across the Gulf Coast and Florida. And although on the seasonal time scale, no drought development is forecast across the northern to central Great Plains and Midwest, we will have to closely monitor drought conditions on the shorter time scale. Any combination of above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation could lead to rapidly developing drought conditions, so we'll keep a close eye on that. And finally, also, just point out some development is forecast on the seasonal time scale in Hawaii, with a small area of persistence forecast in southern Puerto Rico. And so that includes my slide, so I guess I'll pass it back to John now.
Great. Thanks, Brad. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. Charles, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and then queue up the first question?
Yes, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session of today's call. If you have a question today, make sure you press star one, record your name and affiliation. One moment while we collect questions, sir. Our first question comes from John Boyer from the Richmond Times. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks so much for doing this. And this question would go to Brad, I think. Looking at the seasonal outlook for the summer months around Virginia, where I'm at here in the surrounding region, what are the main factors leading us to that warmer and wetter favored outlook? And also, what, if any, sources of uncertainty are there in that outlook?
Yeah, hey, John. So the increased chances of above normal temperatures across the eastern U.S., a couple of reasons for that forecast. Good model agreement among the dynamical models, and also long-term decadal trends in temperatures for the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. Likewise, precipitation. There's a wet signal in the long-term trends for the Mid-Atlantic. Also, a good model agreement for above normal precipitation in the Mid-Atlantic. And also, if we're on the cool side of ENSO neutral conditions later this summer, there's a tendency for cold fronts to progress a little farther to the south into the southeast Mid-Atlantic, which could lead to wetter conditions. And finally, the hurricane outlook was just released yesterday, and that they are favoring a 60% chance of above normal tropical cyclone activity in the Atlantic Basin. So that could also be a favorable reason for above normal precipitation.
All right, thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome.
And Charles?
No additional questions.
No additional questions. Thank you so much, Charles. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I would like to thank all of the speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end by reminding all of you to mark your calendars for some upcoming releases. The release of the May 2020 United States Climate Statistics is scheduled for June 8th. The release of the May 2020 Global Climate Statistics is scheduled for June 12th. And the next media telecon, which will be for the May United States and Global Climate Report, is scheduled for 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, June 18th. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later today. If you have any further informational needs, please feel free to email me at john.john@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. This concludes today's call. Thanks so much.
And that concludes today's conference. Thank you all for participating. You may disconnect at this time.